Good evening and welcome to the Man Cave. This is Aaron Rittmaster, your host for the Diz Dads podcast, episode number 53. And with me tonight to discuss our favorite Disney animated films are David Nicely.
Hi, everybody.
Jason Knox.
Good evening, everyone.
And Kevin Bentley.
Hello, everyone.
So we're taking a bit of a departure tonight from our usual theme park discussions. And, you know, we're Diz Dads. We like a lot of things Disney. And one of the things that we all enjoy sharing with our families are the Disney animated films. So today we're going to talk about our favorite Disney animated films. But before we get there, I want to take a minute and remind everybody that it's not too late to join in with the fun at the first ever Diz Dads convention. That convention is being held January 10th through 14th, 2013, at Walt Disney World. We worked with our sponsor, Fairy Tale Journeys Travel, to arrange some really great room discounts at Wilderness Lodge, Port Orleans Riverside, and All-Star Movies. We currently still have rooms available at all three resorts. We also have theme park tickets available at a 10% discount. And best of all, you get the fun and camaraderie of hanging out with your fellow Diz Dads for a few days. If you haven't already made plans to join us, you really should. You can contact any of the Diz Dads Fairy Tale Journeys agents. You can find us listed on the Fairy Tale Journeys by Diz Dads page that you can find at the top of the menu bar there at DizDads.com. All right, now, gentlemen, we're going to be talking Disney animation here in a second, but before I get there, I would be remiss given that, you know, we record about a week before we release a podcast, and just today, the day that we're recording this, comes the news that Disney has purchased Lucasfilm. And not only has Disney purchased Lucasfilm, but part of this deal is that there are plans in the works already to make Star Wars Episode VI. And George Lucas will serve as a creative consultant. Kathleen Kennedy will serve as an executive producer. But everything else is up to Disney, and it's in Disney's court. And I just want to go really quickly. Oh, Jason, did I just say Episode VI?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Episode VII. Episode VI was one of the good ones. Episode VII, and you know, Disney's going to have control over this. You know, Disney is the boss now, and I just wanted to go around real quickly and get everybody's sort of immediate reactions to this announcement that Lucasfilm is going to become part of the Disney family, sort of joining Pixar and Marvel in becoming, you know, full-fledged elements of the Disney universe. So, Jason, why don't you give us your take?
Well, you know, I think it's really good. It opens their wallets, but it opens their hands to a lot of possibilities that they can extend their parks, they can extend their merchandise, there's so much they can do with it. And it'll be neat. I would rather see them, now that they acquired this, do away with their Avatar land and turn it into Star Wars land. You know, maybe you have some Ewoks running around the Animal Kingdom or something. But you know, I think it'll be good. I think it'll give them a good thing to kind of work forward on now.
All right, Kevin, how about you? What's your take?
I tell you, I was really excited when I first heard about it, because thinking of, you know, combining Disney and Lucas Films. Both of them some fantastic work in the past. That just the look at what Episode VII could turn out to be, I mean, it's just, to me, it's going to be mind-boggling. I can't wait. And also, you know, the idea of, you know, going on a Disney cruise ship and maybe have Captain Han Solo as the captain might not be too bad either.
That's true. Would make for some interesting possibilities, sort of like those Pixar cruises that they ran out of on the West Coast there.
Yeah.
How about you, David?
I'm really excited. The fact that Star Wars is joining Disney means that all my favorite things are under one roof and all my money is just going to solely one company now. but I am really looking forward to it, to see the continuation of the story with 7, 8, 9, and integrating that maybe more to the park. Star Wars weekends are huge from what I understand. So maybe, as Jason commented earlier, get rid of Avatar Land, put in maybe like Endor Land and two words, Wookiee cookies.
You know, I'm really excited about this, and I'm excited about it for several reasons. One thing is, first of all, I think this may be where some of those rumors a few months back were coming from about some extensions of the use of the Star Wars franchise in Disney's Hollywood Studios. You know, hidden in amongst all that talk of Cars Land coming was some discussion of perhaps a new Mos Eisley Cantina opening over on that side of the park where Star Tours is, and some other, you know, things along those lines. And I welcome that. I think that would be terrific. I'd love to see that area of the park become maybe more of a sort of a Lucasfilm land. And that is really kind of leading to my second point here, which is Lucasfilm, you know, they talked initially about Star Wars, but there's a really rich catalog there of more than just you know, the Star Wars franchise. There's the Indiana Jones franchise, which has already found a home in Disney parks in places. And there, I think there are some great opportunities to continue to build on that franchise. I expect that we'll continue to see things being built on not just the Star Wars film franchise, but the Clone Wars animated series. So I just think this is a win all around. It's a lot of money up front. But, you know, if you look at the kind of bank that Avengers made, you know, I think that Disney's looking to make their investment back pretty quickly with, you know, a couple of blockbuster follow-ups in the Star Wars movie franchise. And that's before they even get to the rest of the Lucas catalog. Now, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know yet whether this purchase is everything Lucas, you know, lock, stock, and barrel. I'll be looking forward to seeing more detail as it comes out, because the other thing to me that's interesting about this is possibly getting access to the LucasArts technology. You know, Lucas has been at the forefront of a lot of especially movie sound technology and also some projection technology. And I almost wonder whether acquiring some of the access to some of that technology might also have a role in all of this and might be related to some of the delays in Avatar Land, since it's been my belief all along that the real reason, the core of what's going on with the Avatar connection with James Cameron is getting access to his you know, 3D patents and the ability to use his technology in the parks and in their films.
Aaron, do you know if this deal includes Industrial Light and Magic?
I don't, and I'm really interested to see if ILM is part of this or if it's separate. I mean, all of the press that I've seen so far seems to suggest that this is sort of Lucas's retirement plan, you know, that he's kind of looking to turn everything over. But whether he's just talking about his film franchises or whether he's talking about everything else as well, I don't know the answer to that.
Well, we do have George the Thing for Pixar. He was the original owner, so Disney has already gained a tremendous amount of technology from him, obviously from other channels, but
yeah.
If ILM is included in this, it could be a huge play for Disney in upcoming films.
And one thing that I meant to mention, you know, yeah, $4 billion plus is a lot of money. But as I understand it, Disney's been paying $1 million a year royalty to Lucas for the use of Star Wars and Star Tours. And that's just for Star Tours. You know, that's not even including what they pay him for the rights to use, you know, Indiana Jones for the stunt show and for the ride in mm-hmm. Disneyland. So, you know, there's some cost savings built into acquiring this as well, because they're now paying themselves those franchise fees. All right. So we've wandered far afield. We've gone into news, which we don't normally do, but you know, since we were already going to be talking about film, I didn't feel like we could, you know, avoid talking about it. But I want to bring us back to what we originally set out to talk about on this episode, and that is Disney Animation. All of us are big fans of Disney Animation. And just to kind of make sure we're all on the same page and everybody knows what they're going to be listening to here, we're talking Disney Animation and just Disney Animation. So we're not talking Pixar right now. We're not talking Studio Ghibli. We're not talking about the mixed animation, live action features that Disney did, you know, like Bedknobs and Broomsticks or Mary Poppins. Here we're talking about sort of classic Disney animation, although we're not limiting it to any time particular time period. So, guys, let's dive right into this. We've each developed a sort of a top five list to work from, but I'm not going to hold anybody to any particular, ranking. And let's just kind of get the ball rolling here. I'm going to ask David Nicely to get us started. And David, what's one of the films on your top five list?
Snow White is on there, and mainly because the main reason was without the success of Snow White, we would never have Disneyland. Without Disneyland, we would never have Disney World. Snow White, you know, was something different for animation, and we're spoiled by watching movies now, but going back and looking at it and the processes that Walt and the Imagineers had to develop in order to film the scenes and the movement in Snow White was just awesome to think about with what they had to work with.
Yeah, you know, I considered Snow White, and it certainly gets credit for literally inventing the format. I mean, that was the first, you know, feature-length live action, or I'm sorry, the feature-length animated film, and we wouldn't have any of these others without it. To me, the problem is that, you know, having rewatched the film not too long ago, it's not a very good story.
It is rough, but I think, you know, and maybe that's putting it, you know, a little bit mildly, but it has given us some characters that are still, you know, relevant today in the sense when you go into the parks, Snow White is still at Epcot. I still see lots of little girls. We were there in September dressed up as Snow White. So it still plays to the hearts of a lot of little girls.
Well, that's true. And there's no line longer at Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party than the line to meet the Seven Dwarves altogether.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, years ago when we were when we would go before we had children, I can remember seeing when they were still out at park opening in the front part of the Magic Kingdom there where Chip and Dale are now. And it was just absolutely a mob for people to go see Dopey and to go see Doc. It was just, people have it holds a special place in a lot of people's hearts.
All right, I can see that. All right, so Jason, what's one of the films on your list?
Most of them on my list are on there. You know, some of them are kind of rougher, but the ones that I picked, they've got at least one tune in them that I'm into music, so they've got at least one tune in them. So I guess the first one I've got is Aladdin. I liked it because of, Genie is hilarious in it. And there's several tunes in there that you get stuck in your head. And so that was why that made my list.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's one of the first ones that, my daughter and I really enjoyed together. And so it's not on my list, but it could have made it. It could have made it. All right. Anybody else have anything to say about Aladdin?
I still think that Abu is probably one of the best sidekicks ever in a Disney film.
Yeah, I know Aladdin is on one that was on my list also. It's just that whole series of them. I don't know. Maybe it was just the Genie, and I love that guy.
Yeah, you know, Genie is an interesting character because that sort of character, that kind of character, almost became a stock character for a while there in Disney animated films. He was so popular that we kind of saw him reincarnated in some other other films in slightly different ways. But there's no question. Aladdin had a great impact. The soundtrack is terrific. And we really, again, there's an example of we got enduring characters. There's no doubt that Jasmine is a favorite of Diz Dads in the parks. All right. So Kevin, what's one of the films on your list?
Well, we already went over Aladdin, but I'm going to have to say probably my top pick is going to be Lady and the Tramp. That's just, and I can't explain why. The first time I saw it, I was young. But it's just, it's my all-time favorite. And my favorite scene in that movie, and it's got a poster here somewhere. I've just moved and it's packed up. But of the scene with them in the alley behind Tony's eating the spaghetti.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's an image that has worked its way into just sort of American culture. You know, we see versions of that scene in live action film, you know, all the time, referencing back. I mean, it's sort of become the quintessential love scene moment for sort of innocent love in both serious ways and in films that are kind of poking fun at it and being silly about it.
Yeah, there was even a pasta commercial on the other day that I don't know if they did it purposely or not, but they more than likely did. That was a takeoff on that. It was just a man and a woman. So,
yep.
that's funny.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the really interesting things to me about Lady and the Tramp is how the entire film is from the dog's point of view. And I think that was a really innovative thing by Disney at that time. You never see, you know, people's faces. Mm-hmm. What you see is what the dog would have seen. You know, you see people from the waist down or the knees down.
Yeah, you never see, you know, the human characters. You're right. But I think what frustrates me going to the parks is they never have any of the characters there.
That's true.
That's the one movie you never get to meet any of the characters.
Do you remember the Lady and the Tramp waffles at Tony's Town Square?
You know, I don't.
Mm. I didn't even know those had existed.
I didn't either.
They were imprinted on the waffle, similar to what Pop Century does with the word pop.
Yeah.
It was a picture of Lady and the Tramp, and it was served with strawberries and cream for breakfast. Mm. It was pretty awesome.
Well, the number five on my list, and, you know, it doesn't go high on the list, and it may be a little odd choice considering the range of films I had to pick from, but I had to put Fantasia on my list. And it's on my list for a couple of reasons. You know, I criticized Snow White early on for not really having much story, and I guess, you know, in Fantasia comes along, there's really no continuing storyline. There's a lot of vignettes, but Fantasia makes my list for a couple of very different reasons. On the one hand, it makes my list because, to me, Fantasia is sort of Walt Disney's huge cojones moment, right? I mean, he's made Snow White, which saves the studio. He's made Pinocchio, which was not a big financial success. And he goes back and he says, you know, I've got the most talented animators in the world. I love classical music. Let's put those things together and people will enjoy it. And darned if he didn't write. I mean, there's no continuous story to it, but there are pieces of classical music that have been around for 100 years and had been around for 100 years at the time they made this film that people hear those pieces now and can't hear those pieces without seeing in their heads the scenes from Fantasia. You know, there are dancing hippos in your head as soon as you hear Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies. You can't hear Night on Bald Mountain without Chernabog being generated in your head and Sorcerer Mickey and, you know, Sorcerer's Apprentice. All of those are such enduring icons of Disney animation that, you know, me, the guy who loves story, actually puts that film on my top five list. The other reason it's on my list is that it's a very personal film for me. It's one of the few memories I have of going out and doing something with my maternal grandparents. They were much older than my paternal grandparents, so, you know, I have lots of memories of going over to their house, but we didn't go out and do many things with them. And I have a distinct memory of my grandparents taking my brothers and I to see Fantasia when it was re-released and in the, you know, one of those old style, huge auditorium theaters on the giant, you know, really huge widescreen. And I'm sure we fussed and whined about going to see a movie that had no dialogue. But, you know, now 40 years later, I remember it and I remember the experience.
And look what it spawned in the parks. I mean, the icon in Hollywood Studios is the Sorcerer's Hat. Mickey's PhilharMagic is, you know, loosely based on Fantasia.
Yeah, well, and you know, there are little bits of it all over the place. You meet Sorcerer Mickey in the park. All right, so let's keep things moving. I'm rambling tonight. So why don't we come back around to, let's see, David again? What's another one on your list?
The next one I had on my list was Lilo and Stitch.
It's on my list, too.
It was kind of a break from what they had done with Beauty and the Beast and kind of went back to a different kind of drawing style. Stitch is, you know, an iconic character. The music on it was really good as well. My kids still listen to the DVD bonus features more than they watch the movie with the children's choir and the hula girls dancing. But it was just a great story about family. You know, and it's still played in at Ohana. You can have breakfast with Stitch. But it's just one of those that really resonated that family is very important. That's what Disney's wrapped around. We're Disdads, so we're built around family. So it just, it's very special to me.
Hey, I agree. It's on my list as well. A lot of the same reasons. It's also the first of these Disney films that my son really got into. You know, I mean, he didn't have any interest in the princess movies that my daughter liked to watch, but he's happy to watch Lilo and Stitch anytime she suggests it. Although for some reason he actually even prefers the, you know, direct to DVD sequels. I don't know. I think he identifies with Leroy. All right. So Jason, what's another one on your list?
Probably the lowest one on my list right now is Oliver and Company. You know, that one's got some good music in it, and it's an all-in-all kind of, you know, it's a good movie. It's not, I don't know, it's one that I remember growing up with and I used to watch a lot. And, you know, so it's not high on my list, but it's there.
Okay. Kevin, how about you? What's on your list?
I have to say another one on my list would be Beauty and the Beast.
What got it there?
I like the storyline. I think the visually has a lot of beautiful visual images, a lot of good music. And one of my all-time favorite scenes is that library. I would love to have that library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Beauty and the Beast is another one that the soundtrack really stands out to me. Terrific music. And you're right. I mean, it's got some stunning visuals. It was one of those first films where Disney kind of blended some computer animation in with hand-drawn, and it allowed them to do things like the Be Our Guest scene. And I think you can see just how much of an impact the film had when you see the frenzy that the theme park community has gone into over the Be Our Guest restaurant.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see that when I go in December.
So the next one on my list is another one that, I mean, I guess you've already heard me say things about music several times. This next one probably makes the list as much for its music as anything else. And that's The Jungle Book. It's another one that I have really good fond memories of from childhood. I love that soundtrack. The jazz music is terrific. It's another one that, you know, my kids got into, and my son especially, based on the music. So I think it's a fun story, fun visuals, but mostly terrific music that gets it onto my list. I don't know, David, you had something you wanted to say about Jungle Book.
Well, I was just going to comment, kind of going into, it was on my list as well. I love Baloo. I love Phil Harris. did a great many voices for Disney. And even though they did a remake a number of years later with John Goodman taking over the role of Baloo, anytime that comes on or my kids listen to the song, they I want to be like you, or King Louis sings, we just, you can't help but dance.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know, Kevin, you look like you want to sing.
he was talking about, I want to be like you. In fact, my wife just said that as she walked out the room here. But I mean, it's not on my favorite list, but it's up there.
Yeah.
So.
All right. David, let's come back around to you again.
The next one I have on my list would probably be my all-time favorite, and that is Robin Hood. I loved the story as a kid before I ever saw the movie. It was released the year I was born, so I was not as familiar with seeing it until it had released on VHS. Again, going back to Phil Harris, who does the voice of Little John, that big, deep, barreling voice, just adding animals to play the characters of, classic literature, heroes and villains. I like the take on Prince John, Sir Hiss. It's just one of those that last, I didn't know if my kids would like it or not. They've watched it numerous times. It's usually one that we pack whenever we drive down to Disney.
Yeah, Jason, was there something you wanted to say about Robin Hood?
Yeah, for Robin Hood, was actually my number one on my list. And it's one of those I grew up with, and you can watch it over and over again. I know I did. You know, everybody's always got, and our kids now have movies that they watch over and over and over, and some of the movies they have now kind of drive you nuts. But this was probably the one that I had that I watched over and over again and probably drove my parents nuts with. You know, it's a good storyline. The music, the whistling in the beginning and throughout the movie, that tune just gets in your head and you end up whistling it for weeks. And so that's what makes it my favorite.
Yeah, you know, Roger Miller gets going there, and it could almost pull a Small World on you.
Yes, it can.
All right, well, Jason, is there another one on your list you want to share?
Well, you guys are kind of picking them off on me here. So the only one that I guess I got left that hasn't been said would be A Goofy Movie. That's my second favorite, and again, it's, I don't know what it is, but that last song that when they get to their destination to get Max to that concert, that song that they play in the end, I don't know why, it's just catchy, and I can just play that part of that movie over and over again because that song, I don't know what it is about that song. And the whole movie, you know, it's got Goofy in it. It's great. The stunts that, you know, he does, and they got the dancing Bigfoot in there, you know, when he gets dancing to the Bee Gees. The cast on that is great. It's a great movie. I love it.
Okay. I have to admit that I have not seen the Goofy Movie, so apparently I have an assignment where we're sending Kevin to see Lilo and Stitch and me to see a Goofy Movie, I believe. So, Kevin, do you have another one on your list we haven't mentioned yet?
Yeah, I do, and I'm kind of surprised nobody else has either. The Lion King.
Terrific film. It was another one. Like the next one on my list. It didn't quite make it, but go ahead. Tell us why it's on yours.
It's another one I think that's great visually. I love the story, and the music is just, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, you know, Lion King is such an epic film, you almost forget its animation.
Exactly.
And it's another one that I think my son just has lousy taste in movies because he likes Lion King, but he prefers the sequels,
mm-hmm.
especially the Lion King 1.5, where they're kind of retelling the story, you know, from Timon's perspective, and and it sort of makes fun of the whole movie. So, you know, I think that tells us more about him than it tells us about the movie. But the key is that Lion King really does kind of, tell this epic story with terrific music, like you were saying, and on such a grand scale.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Jason, was there something you wanted to mention about Lion King?
Well, it's another one. It's got a good storyline. There's some good music to it. And there's parts of it that actually pull at your heartstrings a little bit. And, you know, every once in a while, if you catch it on the right day, it might make you a little teary eyed, but, you know, it was going to make my list. I probably should have thrown it in over Oliver and Company, but you know, I was just making a list and that one, I didn't think of at the time, but it is a good movie. And I like the sequels to it, but I think the first one was the best one of them all. And obviously it does well because, I mean, they threw it in with their Art of Animation Resort. So,
right.
You know, it's definitely something to build off of.
All right. So, David, do you have anything left on – oh, I'm sorry. It should be my turn here. And I've got a couple still on my list. One is – this next one is one that was a favorite of my daughter's and mine when she was young, and that is The Great Mouse Detective. I adore this film. You know, the story, the really nice, fun parallels with human Sherlock Holmes, the whole feel of the movie. It's a little different than most Disney films. It's not a musical, really, although there are a couple of songs in it. I love the father-daughter aspect of it, because that's kind of, you know, how I got into the movie was watching it with my daughter. And I just think, you know, Basil of Baker Street is a great character. And I really, that's one that I wish that Disney would develop a theatrical sequel to, because I think that there's a lot more of that story that could be told. And I think kids would really enjoy it. All right, David, your turn. Anything still on your list available?
Yeah, I got two left, but I'll go with this one, being that you're going with the father-daughter theme, and that would be Sleeping Beauty. That was really the first movie that my girls would just sit down and watch. They weren't even 3 years old yet, and they would just sit and watch, and they would dance every time the I Know You song comes on. And right before they were three, we took them to Disney World for the first time, and the first princess they met was Aurora. And she gave him a big kiss and left a big lipstick stain. And that's something that meant a lot more to my wife and I, because for the rest of the trip, everything was Aurora, Aurora, Aurora. So the movie and the whole Disney indoctrination that we do with our children was really starting to pay off. And we could see them really loving the characters and the stories, and we still watch it on a regular basis.
All right, so Jason, is there anything left on your list, or did we wipe you out?
Oh, you guys kind of picked me clean. I don't have anything left.
All right, how about you, Kevin? Anything still on your list?
Well, I'd have to put Aristocats out there.
All right, excellent.
That one's on my list.
That one was neck and neck on my list with Jungle Book. So tell us about Aristocats and why it made your list.
Actually, because I think I like Thomas. The Alley Cat.
Sure.
And the whole Scat Cat group. I mean, they're just, I don't know, there's just something about them, at least in my mind, that and then the whole chase scenes and getting back, and I love the horses and the fight in the barn and all of that. It's just, I don't know, it's hard to nail down one thing. So, and I think maybe it's because this way everything all goes together, and how if the butler had just been patient and seen what was going on, he would have ended up with it all anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's always fun to see the bumbling villain, you know, be felled by simple animals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and toss out the last one that's on my list that we haven't talked about yet, and it's actually at the top of my list. Probably an odd choice for the top of my list, but it is Meet the Robinsons. It's a film that gets overlooked all the time. It kind of came out during one of those times when, you know, Disney Animation was maybe not at its peak. wasn't necessarily getting the attention that, you know, it had gotten before and that it was going to get after. It came out, let's see, Meet the Robinsons. Okay, yeah, it came out right after a string of really, frankly, bad or less than good Disney films. I mean, it was Treasure Planet, Brother Bear, Home on the Range, Chicken Little, and then Meet the Robinsons. And to me, Meet the Robinsons was the beginning of that turning point where Disney Animation was making a comeback. You know, the next one after Meet the Robinsons is Bolt, and then we get Princess and the Frog, and we're kind of rolling again. I love Meet the Robinsons because, first of all, it has the guts to have a complex story. It's not oversimplified for children. It's certainly accessible for children, but it's a multi-layered story. It involves time travel, and it's just so rich in that in that side. There's a lot of story there. It's got incredibly memorable characters. Lewis is quite possibly my all-time favorite animated Disney character, and I love the way that the film really embodies Walt's spirit. There's even a Walt's quote about always building for the future and all of that. That's part of the film itself. I just think it more than any of these other films, to me, Meet the Robinsons kind of embodies what Disney is about, the fantasy of it, the magic of technology and invention and innovation and creativity. And that's one I'll even sit down and watch Meet the Robinsons by myself. I'm happy to have the kids watch with me, but I'm perfectly happy watching that one on my own. And the T-Rex in Meet the Robinsons cracks me up every time. The conversation back and forth between he and the villain character just cracked me up.
It's a great family theme too. You know, like you said, it broaches a subject that isn't too deep for children. It's resolved in a way, toward the end where they understand. As you said, the T-Rex is hilarious, and there's just so many one-liners. The line where Lewis asks what his dad looks like, and he says Tom Selleck, is the voice of the adult,
right?
And they have the picture there of Tom Selleck, just cracks me up every time.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, similar to Lilo and Stitch, it has that really powerful family message, and also similar in a lot of ways to Lilo and Stitch. This whole idea that we in many ways make our own family.
Absolutely.
All right. So does anybody have any films that we haven't talked about yet still on their list?
I'd like to throw out an honorable mention for Sword in the Stone.
That was an honorable mention on my list too. So go ahead and talk about it for a second.
Unfortunately, I don't know that King Arthur's story resonates with young boys as much as it did in my generation, I felt. I remember reading the story of Excalibur and wanting to be a knight of the round table. And this kind of brought it into a, cartoon version. And just the interaction between Wart and, Merlin and all their little adventures, it's hilarious. Madam Mim, when they go into their little battle, the little squirrel love scenes, it cracks my daughters up. It's an underappreciated movie because I don't think it ever held the high regard. It didn't have a princess in it. It doesn't have, a big major character that you can go see at a theme park. But it's definitely one of the best.
Well, I think Merlin is one of those characters that once upon a time was in the parks regularly and just isn't anymore. And I think personally that's a big loss. I wish that they would have, Merlin still as a walk around character, over by where the Sword in the Stone is, at Walt Disney World. Cause that was really a unique kind of guest interaction.
And there's not a kid or family that doesn't go there where they at least don't see that or have their picture taken there. So it's sort of like, It would be a great chance to reintroduce the movie to continuous generations, and it just doesn't feel like it gets that attention.
Yeah. I mean, we could get into the details. I think that ultimately the film had some pacing problems and some plot development problems. It starts a little slow and then all of a sudden gets rolling really fast. That give it some trouble. And I'm still confused because you see it run on like Disney Channel every so often. Mm-hmm. It's just me, but there are at least two different cuts of the movie, I think, that are still out there. And it seems a little confusing because there's a weird cut in there near the beginning.
I would agree. We have a copy, and it doesn't seem to match up evenly with what we've seen on television.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've heard us rambling, and you've heard what we think about our favorite Disney animated films. We'd love to hear from you about what your favorite Disney animated films are. You could email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, or participate in the discussion boards at our forums at boards.dizdads.com. We'd love to see you there. Until next time, I've been Aaron Ripmaster, and with me tonight were Kevin Bentley.
Have a good night.
Jason Knox.
See y'all next time.
And David Nicely.
Good night, everybody.
Sorry for stumbling your name. All right, nice job, guys.
Brought to you by Fairytale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to. This has been a Wizard of Oz production.